Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Marcy Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Iranian students 3 decades ago called the American Embassy in Tehran at the time a nest of espionage. Well, the students later released documents from the embassy to prove that those employed inside the American building were doing a whole lot more than issuing visas and passports, but actually trying to undermine the new government of the Islamic Republic. And now it is not just Iran, but many of Washington's friends who say that they are tired of the U.S. spying on them.
Spying on both friends and foes. That's what the U.S. has been doing over the past decade through its intelligence agencies all across the globe. The Americans not only snooped about their allies, but also used their embassies in countries such as Germany for spying operations. On Sunday, and ahead of November the 5th, the day Iranian youth captured the U.S. embassy in Tehran, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution told a group of students that 30 years was needed for the world to understand how ahead of time the Iranians were and why they took over the U.S. diplomatic mission. At the time of the embassy takeover, it turned out that the U.S. had provided the former Shah of Iran with intelligence on Iranian people.
The USA was spying in a wholesale fashion against the Iranian population, and then giving that information to SAVAK, the notorious Gudish, the secret police.
Documents seized from the embassy also showed how the CIA had turned the mission into a base for intelligence gathering about regional countries. Although many of those documents had been shredded into strips, Iranian students managed to piece them back together and published them in 1982. Iran's leader also referred to the fallout from U.S. intelligence activities on other countries. He said Washington's closest allies now apply the term nest of espionage to refer to the U.S. missions on their soil. People close to the U.S. government say that's only the tip of the iceberg and that the American intelligence services even bug those who work inside the administration.
I had a lawyer go and ask for the files on me in the United States. And he was told that there were over 50,000 individual files on me alone. That's more years than I've been alive.
So far, U.S. spying activities have been limited to its European allies and Latin American rivals. But as the list is getting longer by day and stretching to Asian countries such as Indonesia and China, one might say that's only a matter of time for the U.S. spying programs about its adversaries such as Iran to come to light.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Tampa, Florida, Sir Wayne Madsen, international journalist and syndicated columnist, and out of Washington, director of the Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard Weitz. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Washington with Mr. Weitz. In your opinion, Mr. Weitz, what are the responsibilities of an embassy?
I'm glad you asked that question, since the package itself was merging a bunch of different concepts and ideas. I mean, an embassy is a representative of a foreign government on the territory of another. And the people assigned there have a bunch of responsibilities. As your package mentioned, one of them is to issue visas. But there are a lot of other functions. In particular, if you're a political officer, economic officer, your duty is to go out there, find out as much as you can about the country's politics or economics, meet with people, cultivate friends, exchange insights and ideas with them, tell them what your government's thinking of, get ideas from them, and then report back to Washington about your results. So I'm not sure that normally it's not considered spying. It's part of your duty to collect information on the country where you're positioned and then report on it, as well as represent your own government's views.
Okay. And Wayne Madsen, your perspective, we know if we go back more than 30 years right here in Iran, the students at that time were saying, of course, this following the documents that they had found, that Washington was in the attempt or trying to overthrow the new government of the Islamic Revolution. How significant is what the students, Iranian students, were saying back then? Sounds very familiar to even what friends of Washington are saying today.
Well, it's really no different than many American embassies that have been caught involved in not only espionage, but fomenting coup d'etat and revolutions in other countries. There's just been a revelation of a CIA document that shows that the U.S. Embassy in Santiago, Chile, played a very big role on 9/11/73 in the overthrow and assassination of President Salvador Allende. Similar things have been seen throughout Africa and Asia. We all know that embassies are used for espionage, but espionage is a lot like shoplifting. It only becomes a problem when somebody's caught. The U.S. has been caught big time and now has to pay the price trying to recover from a very bad image it has in all these countries that were subjected to this surveillance.
What about that, Mr. Weiss? Do you think that the U.S.'s image has been tarnished? Has it damaged its reputation around the world?
With respect to that question, yes, I think we all agree this has hurt the image, particularly President Obama. He's seen as perhaps being out of the loop or out of control or ignorant or not very skillful at how he's handling this crisis and a couple others. Hurts U.S. soft power. Now, with respect to the subversion question, we have to be careful here. I'm not aware of any foreign embassy claiming that the U.S. has been seeking to overthrow their government recently. The NSA scandal is primarily due to intercepts not involving embassy officials, but involving the U.S. collection of massive amount of data, and then perhaps some of it using people that perhaps some of it should be considered out of bounds, such as foreign leaders like Chancellor Merkel.
Well, would you understand why these foreign governments, why foreign governments would be concerned, being that perhaps during this time is not the case, but in the past, as Mr. Mattson pointed out, and there are many other cases that have pointed to the U.S. embassies being involved in attempted coups or actually coups. So could you understand why now that the sovereign countries would be concerned with these latest revelations, staying in Washington?
I understand why they're concerned, but again, none of them have said they're concerned about possible efforts to overthrow their government. I'm not aware of the U.S. having done that in the last couple decades. That was really a Cold War phenomenon, and since then, I'm not familiar with any case when the U.S. tried to do that. I think what I was going to try and say is when we talk about the harm, I think the real harm is going to come to U.S. corporations. I think a lot of them now are going to find it difficult, for example, American telecommunications corporations and so on, to gain contracts in foreign governments in foreign countries when there's a fear that they'll just be feeding back whatever they collect to the Washington intelligence community. So I think that's where the damage will be most concrete.
What about it, Wayne Mattson? How significant that this has been, that it has happened with America's friends now, and how big of a, let's say, a compromising position perhaps has it put some of its friends with perhaps very damaging information that the United States has gathered?
One of the documents that Edward Snowden revealed is a map of the world showing the location of 80 units of the Special Collection Service, a joint CIA-NSA operation that breaks into offices, puts bugs on computer systems, covertly taps into host nations' telecommunications networks. 80 of them. 80 of them are located in what can be considered adversaries of the United States, but also friends. And as far as the Special Collection Service units, that map is not even inclusive. It only talks about one group of Special Collection Service units at U.S. embassies, missions, and consulates that do one particular thing. The total number of these units probably is well in excess of 100. As far as what they do, we saw from the recent revelations in the New York Times that the government of Venezuela was under intense surveillance by NSA, and we know that in 2002, President Chavez was ousted in a short-lived coup, and that had the direct fingerprints of the CIA on it. And there's been other attempts to overthrow elected governments in Ecuador, in Bolivia, and these, of course. So when the NSA is wiretapping and surveilling the presidents of these countries who are not considered to be friends of the United States, of course that type of intelligence can be passed to other parts of the U.S. intelligence community for other other reasons, including fomenting internal rebellions, labor strikes, having major food distributors hoard staples, as what is going on in Venezuela today, for example.
Well, Mr. Weitz, in your perspective, what right does Washington has to actually take on this type of position, or take this position and do what it is doing in these sovereign countries? If other countries did it inside of the United States, tell me, what type of reaction do you think that Washington would have towards them?
Well, we have evidence that other countries are doing that. There is, I think your readers, of course, will recall the 10 Russians who pretended to be American citizens so that they could rise up to influence and perhaps report and even influence U.S. decision making. What normally happens is these people are captured or identified and then expelled from the country if they're diplomats, or traded for someone else if they're not. I mean, the thing about diplomats, they often were seen as very useful to be involved in intelligence collection, because if they were caught, they could be protected by their diplomatic status. But the intelligence community has found that this may have worked with in respect to Cold War, when you're dealing with European countries and so on. But now it's kind of hard if you're a U.S. diplomat not to be seen as a potential spy if you're working in a Middle East country, for example. So that's why they often tend to rely on non-diplomats or satellite intercepts or something to collect the information.
Okay, let's switch over to the Facebook comments. Let's see what some of our viewers have to say on this subject.
The world realized espionage of the U.S. today, which Iran exposed 3 decades earlier. Abolish the NSA and CIA and fire all their contractors. They're nothing but troublemakers in the world. Every country spies on other countries. Iran spies on other countries too. The thing is that you shall not be caught. No country is innocent of espionage. All are guilty.
Okay, well, let's get our guest's perspective. Mr. Madsen, now, with what our guests or some of our viewers have been saying about this situation, I want to hear your perspective about it. Basically, that Iran exposed the whole espionage, or a lot of the espionage that the U.S. Was taking on years and years ago. Do you think it was appropriate that the Iranians called the U.S. Embassy the den of espionage?
Well, it was very apparent, because there was an attempt to shred the CIA documents using these long cut shredders. And of course, what happened was, when this sort of spaghetti of paper was discovered, the Iranians turned to the carpet weavers, who were very good at matching patterns, and they managed to put together most of these documents. I remember seeing them in a book once being sold at a CIA-affiliated bookstore on K Street in Washington. And the documents were quite revelatory as far as the connections between the CIA and SAVAK, the Iranians' intelligence service at the time, the Shah's intelligence service. So, yeah, I mean, the documents themselves painted a picture of what was going on at that particular embassy. And that wasn't the only embassy. It's just that the documents were retrieved from that particular location.
Well, your take, Mr. Weitz, we look at other embassies that exist right now today. For example, the American Embassy in Iraq, the largest in the world, larger than Vatican City, more than $1 billion spent on building this entity. Why would the United States need such a large facility in Iraq to take place to basically deal with what they're supposed to, their actual duties in that country would be?
I think it was because the U.S. was trying to clean up the mess that it had left with the Iraq War, in which they destroyed the old government but weren't able to create a new one. And so I think there was a large group of contractors to continue to try and train the Iraqi army. There were going to be a large number of economists and agricultural specialists, police specialists, and so on to help the country recover. I'm not sure, though, if those figures are the latest. My impression is when the Iraqi government unexpectedly failed to renew the U.S. troop status of forces agreement, a lot of, you know, the U.S. forces had to leave, and that might have pulled out a lot of contractors and others. So I think, I'm not sure if it's still the largest. I think they actually scaled that
back considerably. We're talking about the largest
because you well know, since you're even closer than I am. Right.
Okay, so Wayne Madison.
In Iraq, the U.S. influence has been minimal. I mean.
All right, Wayne Madison, let's look at this situation. Overall, now, do you think that the role of American embassies in various countries is one that is very aggressive? And with this latest exposure of what a lot of these embassies are doing, how do you think that it's going to affect how sovereign countries view the American embassies inside of their own country?
Well, what we know about the operations, thanks to Ed Snowden, about the Special Collections Service, and I believe he's probably the first whistleblower out of that very, very highly classified part of the U.S. intelligence community. This facility, after all, is headquartered in Beltsville, Maryland, in the Washington suburbs, and it has a direct cable to the adjoining facility, which is the Diplomatic Telecommunications Service of the U.S. State Department. So it can send these classified messages to all these U.S. embassies and consulates and missions around the world. The Special Collections Service is probably going to come under very intense scrutiny now in a lot of countries, especially their personnel who are deemed to be with that particular unit, which is a joint NSA-CIA operation. We know, for example, in some countries, they maintain remote facilities, like in Chiang Mai, Thailand. So the comings and goings of these agency personnel, CIA, NSA personnel, are going to be under intense scrutiny by the host nation's intelligence services, especially when they go out of the embassy to visit remote locations, because that's obviously where the taps are located, into the internet, into foreign satellite communications, et cetera. So there's going to be a lot more scrutiny of American diplomatic personnel around the world.
Well, Mr. Weitz, how significant is it that these revelations have come from Snowden? And if he had not revealed this information, it appears that these intelligence agencies all around the world had no clue, or at least they hadn't mentioned it to the world, that the United States was actually spying on them. How significant is that as far as the intelligence agencies themselves, and also the significance of Snowden's revelations?
I'm not aware. Well, let me put it this way. I think that the foreign intelligence agencies were somewhat aware. I mean, certainly we came out in the hearings in Congress that a lot of the material that come out about the Europeans was actually information provided by the European intelligence agencies to the United States. So there was intense collaboration there. But on the whole, it's really had a major impact on the whole cyber espionage narrative. As you'll recall, a year ago, much of the attention was on China. There was concerns about Chinese industrial espionage. President Obama was going to make it the main topic of his discussion with President Xi from China. And then all of a sudden, Snowden defects to China, and that's where all these things start coming out. And it did. It's had a major impact. It's changed the narrative. It has hurt the U.S. influence. It's going to be much harder for the U.S. intelligence agency to conduct its affairs. It's maybe on the par with WikiLeaks and disrupting U.S. diplomatic relations with other countries. So I have to think it's had a big impact on global affairs. I do want to point out, though, because I think it's particularly relevant for your viewers, that even with all this intelligence collection, the U.S. often, as others, gets it wrong. As you'll recall, in the beginning, going back to the beginning of this program, in the beginning of 1979, the CIA concluded there was 100% certainty that there would not be a coup in Iran, or not be an overchange of government in Iran, that the Shah would be able to suppress the insurgents. And so this shows you how valuable some of this stuff is.
Okay, and Wayne Mattson, let's go back to what the Iranians did 30 years ago and basically taking over the embassy and basically saying that it was a spy nest. How has that defined, in your perspective, the path of the revolution of the Islamic Republic?
Well, I think it's, been the elephant in the room for the past several decades since the revolution. I noted recently that the new government in Iran has started to take down some of the billboards and posters referring to what happened back then. But clearly, the fact that the U.S. Embassy was part and parcel of what the SAVAK was doing, but not only SAVAK. British intelligence was also involved heavily with the Shah, as was Mossad, the Israeli intelligence service. So the Iranian people, of course, looked at the Shah as a puppet of foreign powers, and when they established that there were these intelligence links between the foreign intelligence agencies and their own, SAVAK, there was a clear pushback against that type of thing, as there would be in any country that felt that discovered that the shots were being called from elsewhere.
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. Mr. Wayne Mattson, investigative journalist and syndicated columnist out of Tampa, Florida, and Mr. Richard Weiss, director of the Hudson Institute out of Washington. And thank you, viewers, for being with us. Make sure you join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much, and goodbye.